This is a Redshirt Geeks special podcast for PsyCon Tampa.
And so it begins.
Files accessed. Transfer of data complete.
Commencing.
By Laura Roslin's fracking rigged election, we are the Redshirt Geeks.
Redshirt Geeks!
Shooting the proton torpedoes and, like, make us go that way.
Redshirt Geeks!
Very bad feeling.
Shut up, Wesley!
Redshirt Geeks!
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Redshirt Geeks!
Hide behind the mound. Dead bars.
Make it so.
Redshirt Geeks!
I'm Laz D, the pseudo-Kiwi.
And I'm the dazzlingly daft Dave.
And this is part 4 of a 4-part special series on PsyCon Tampa 2014.
Redshirt Geeks!
PsyCon Tampa!
Alright everybody, ladies and gentlemen, we are here for the 4th part of a 4-part series on PsyCon Tampa. Our exalted guest is Mr. Richard Hatch. He is a second-time guest to here at Redshirt Geeks, and we're absolutely privileged to have him. Welcome back, Richard.
Thank you. So good to be here.
We've talked to some wonderful people this week so far. We've talked to Robert Westerfield and Stephen Elliott. We've talked to Nikki Klein from the BSG reboot series.
Did you get a date with her?
No, but we got her email address and we have her Skype name.
Oh, she's hot. Believe me. She's a cutie pie.
Yes, she is. Yes.
Yes, she is.
And, of course, we talked to your old friend, Jack Stauffer. That was a very fun interview. And now yourself, of course. So, we understand that PsyCon is a first-time event for these folks in Tampa. And they're really looking to, I guess.
Wait, it's a first-time event?
Yeah, and
crap, you're kidding. Wait, let me call these guys up.
Wait a minute.
I ain't getting on the plane unless they send me a check right away. I don't trust any first-time conventions.
My fees
neither
double.
Should you. Okay, no. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, it's all good. So they're obviously they're looking to put their stamp on the convention circuit, and I know that they've got a lot planned. If you don't mind telling us, how did you get involved? Is it just something you wanted, that kind of came to you and said, we want you to be involved? Or,
I know the people putting it on, and I've seen them at several conventions. I was with them, at another convention, a while back where they had their Vipers and had the Cylon Raider and all that kind of stuff. And so, I've known, Dan for quite a while, and then they had the Raider at the Dragon Con parade, which I rode in, and of course it broke down halfway through the parade, but there was no problem because it was fun to get out and walk with the fleet, and I've gotten to know the fleet a lot better this year. Really moved me, everybody that's part of that organization. They're very, very close-knit group. A couple of their own passed away, one of which, I knew them. They had come to a couple of conventions I was at, and they gave a tribute for the, their fallen companions, warriors, call them what they will. And then they had a big celebration on the weekend that I went to along with Alec Peters and a couple of other friends. And we just hung out with them and talked and shared and did some shots and put them up on the counter there to celebrate their life. And
nice.
So it was a really meaningful Dragon Con. But anyway, Dan's a really good guy, and first-time conventions are always very challenging. Normally I wouldn't go to a first-time convention because it takes a lot to learn the art of running a convention. It takes a lot to market a convention.
Mm-hmm.
First-time conventions, like so many other things, are usually a pretty challenging deal. So I would wait until the second or third one, because if they get to the second or third one, it means that they've learned what to do right. They've they didn't get devastated the first time around, and they found a way to build a successful business model. But because I know Dan and I trust him, I decided that I would give this a shot. And then I knew, since they had Jack Stauffer coming, that he needs me to, you know, kind of tell, what do you want to call it, entertain people around him, kind of keep the energy up. Jack is such a black hole, you know. He comes in the room and he just creates this abyss and everybody sucks into it. and I have to pull him out, you know, with a little levity, a little humor, because, you know, Jack, I'm sure after talking to him, he realized that he was humorless, no humor at all, never told a good joke in his life. But the good thing about Jack is he's really good when he doesn't have any lines. Seriously. If you have the camera on him, especially if it's, you know, a side angle or from far away, a master shot, it comes off real strong.
Well, the wonderful thing is, I guess that what we learned is that there is an opportunity for us to learn something from everybody, no matter where you are in your career. And that was, I mean, that was what I took away from our interview. And it's great that you guys are going to be there together.
What did he share with you? I'm just curious. What was the biggest thing you got from him?
A lot of it comes down to the need to always embrace what it is to be an actor, and to a large degree that is an element of narcissism, I felt that that was as I guess as raw as that can be. That's the plain truth of what it is to be an actor. You know, would you agree, Dave? That's sort of that was the high points of where we went with that interview.
Definitely. And it really gave us like a great insight into sort of the behind the scenes of you know, not just as far as being an actor, as far as, you know, being a narcissist, but the ups, the downs, battling with Hollywood, you know, just kind of everything that nobody normally sees.
Right. You know? Good. I'm glad he shared that. He came to a couple of my seminars and took a lot of notes, so I'm sure he
he gave us the quick notes.
I'm giving him a bad rap. I love Jack. He's a great guy. Yeah, you can. No, he's got a big heart, a little brain, but a big heart. And it more than compensates. No, he's swear to God, he did I've known him since all my children days, and we've been good friends ever since. And I had him all wrong, pegged all wrong. You know, from the moment I met him, he looked like a Darien, you know, very kind of ultra, you know, prim and proper, cork up the ass, you know, kind of guy. And
yeah.
I realized that the guy was far more out there, and you know, the guy really is very what's the word, very big in his thinking. He's outrageous is what I want to say, irreverent. So once we got to know each other, it became really a fait accompli. We became very good friends, and he introduced me to all the beautiful girls at the pool out in Darien on a couple of weekends. So it that cemented the relationship, and from then on we've kind of worked together numerous times, and I'm sure he already told you all the stories, so I probably don't need to remunerate that. Although, if he's listening, Jack, just remember, it was me who introduced you, I believe, to that beautiful wife of yours. God, I wish I had ended up with. But nevertheless, I forgive you for that. She's an amazing woman, and he's got a pretty lucky life right now, I think, living up in up north and having a wonderful theater scene up there. He directs, he writes, he acts, you know, in one of the most beautiful areas in the world. So I'm a little jealous.
Well, that, I mean, again, it's just one of the, as David said, you know, the what we took away from it was it was a very frank conversation, and sometimes you need to have that. You know, a lot of people don't realize the commitment and the hard work and the blood, sweat, and tears that go into everything that you do to be successful in the industry. You know, I mean, look, we have Dave and I and the other members of the Redshirt Geeks have seen you from everything from All My Children all the way up to You know, we know that Cowboys and Indians is coming up, and I know Dave.
Wait, you watched All My Children back then?
I wasn't alive back then.
Reruns.
Yeah, we've seen the reruns.
Reruns. I didn't know there was reruns of All My Children.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that my mother was a huge fan of the show. So
okay.
We've been exposed to your work. In all facets, and you know, of course, it's one of those things where we see you as the person, the character on the screen, and we don't immediately identify you as, you know, Richard Hatch, the guy who's down at the 7-Eleven, you know, getting a bottle of drink or at the gas station or in the grocery store, whatever. So being able to talk about such frank subjects is really refreshing, so that people understand what you guys have to do to be able to look like you look on screen.
Yeah, that's not an easy thing, to tell you the truth. Although, I think sooner or later, unless you're an ingenue, probably the older and craggier and more worn out you look, the better roles you get. because all the great roles are character roles.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah, I can tell you that. Should we be afforded the opportunity? We're hoping to be able to talk to one of your favorite characters in a later episode, and hopefully we can kind of get our listeners afford them the opportunity to see what it's like for somebody to step literally from being, you know, the person, the actor, to the character. And it's just an amazing process. Now, Dave, I understand that Richard has a project in pre-production, and as much as he is able to talk to us about it, you know, why don't you go ahead and bring that into that for us?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was skimming over your IMDb page, and I found something that, you know, I hadn't heard of, at least in our last interview. A show that you're working on, After Hell.
Oh, yeah. After Hell is it's a project that's kind of evolving over in Europe. They wanted Dirk Benedict and myself to play roles in it, and we've talked, but it's gone through one evolution after another, and I just heard from them. We were supposed to shoot sometime in the fall, but it's gotten pushed back, but it's apparently and still in development, and they're getting a lot of interest, and I think they're expanding the budget, expanding the production. And it was already something interesting, but I think they've gotten so much good feedback that they're getting a lot of financial support, so they're taking it to the next level. It's like XNR. XNR started out kind of as a small project. When I say small, it's a relative term. They obviously wanted to do something unique and interesting, and we're working towards that end, but I don't think they expected the massive support they got. And with every step of the way, they took that money and they've turned it into something really quite extraordinary. And I think that got fans even more interested. And so I think in this day and age, the new business model is, you know, so often people give money to people. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you don't know where that money goes, or sometimes you wonder, you know, if the people are going to use that money wisely, and sometimes they do, many times they don't. But I think in this day and age, with the Kickstarter kind of fan support, ground root support of productions that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you got to grow your success. You can start out and, you know, you ask for some money, to development money, and you take that money and you develop something, you build it, and then you show people what you did with it. And if you look like you know what you're doing and you've got something really interesting, people get more excited and they're willing to support you with a little more. And because it's done in such a, I think, pretty, it's done by reaching more people where people don't have to come up with so much money. You know, typically investors, you know, they usually require, you know, minimal investments. You know, it could be $100,000, could be $500,000, could be $50,000. But here, the average person can give 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks. And if you reach millions of people that are interested in your project, you can raise a very tidy budget to do something really, really wonderful. But I do think it's really good, which is what XNR is doing so well, so masterfully. Mm-hmm. They're taking the monies that they get, and they're turning it into gold. They're showing people what is possible and what they can do with it. And if I was an investor looking at it, I'd go, my God, I believe in these people because they've showed me that on a relatively small amount of money, they can create something that looks absolutely breathtaking. So my thought is, once I see that kind of, work ethic, talent, then I'm now behind somebody 100% because I don't think anybody knew what they were going to do or what the scope of it would be. But every step of the way, I knew, number one, the quality of Alec Peters, who he is as a man, who he is as a human being, the quality of my friendship over the years. I've always found him to have a tremendous amount of integrity, but also a tremendous amount of that quality that when he decides to do something, he does it fully, completely, well thought out, detailed, and so professionally, that you can trust a man like that. So I knew that whatever he was going to do was going to be good. I just had no idea it would be this good. And then bringing in Chris Gosick into the equation, watching a masterful young Ridley Scott director with a very powerful artistic eye. And also he's been in my class as well.
Mm.
He's a very talented actor and comedian and has a visual eye that's just amazing. And he brings all of that into XNR. And so XNR is turning into this groundbreaking, I think, industry-changing indie Trek film that could show people the way to the future where productions that studios are not interested in or not interested in doing because studios still don't understand the fan base, still don't understand whether it's, Star Trek, Battlestar, Firefly. They still don't understand those fan bases. They still don't understand those kinds of shows. And the fans will be able to support programming like that, themselves in a very easy, very doable way. And by the way, these productions will also demonstrate that the studios take three times as much money to create the same kind of expertise that can be done with really gifted, talented people who use the money wisely. And I think that these people are going to show what you can produce on a very relatively small budget in comparison to what studios use, and you're going to see a production that's on the size and scope of any industry production. I think that that's going to become more and more reality. And again, I think it's going to change the dynamic. I think, honestly, it's going to, maybe we will move into a new era of indie productions that build direct relationships to the audience, very much like indie writers can take their novels, their books, musicians, singers can go directly to the audience and build a rapport and monetize it. And the everybody wins. The artist makes more money. And the the fan who buys your product spends less money. They spend less money, and the go-between, the in-between, that usually gets the lion's share of the money, that does the least amount of work, I think, is going to slowly fall to the wayside. And so it's a very exciting time we're moving into, where I think there can be a more intimate, more direct relationship between artists and the fan bases that love whatever product, service, story you're developing. It's a very exciting time, I think.
You're absolutely right. The way we go with this this new model of funding projects, we see a fundamental shift from the power of being at the studio level to now at the consumer level. And we would just one of the parts that we talked about during when we were talking with Jack was that when you initially had looked to revitalize the Battlestar franchise, the work that went into it, you guys you did a fantastic job of building an example of how the franchise could be revived on a smaller budget. And again, in a way that served as almost a predecessor for how we're doing it now. I mean, what you see with crowdfunding is the, I guess the realization of the concept is if everybody pitches in $10, and you're going to fund this before you know it. And you've mentioned Axanar as a great example. Before their 30 days were up, I know that they had looked to hopefully kind of meter out their fundraising campaign over a couple of different attempts, but because the response was so great, most of the initial budget that they're looking for was raised in the first 30 days of that that campaign.
Well, I think because the fans believe in this project, and because Chris and the entire team, amazing, talented, gifted team, I think that, this is one of those projects where every dollar is going to be multiplied. So I think you build a relationship with the fans like you do with a TV series. Felicia Day did that with the Guild and had the fans supporting her series.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
And it was she built a new business model that worked. And then that business model is now going through an evolution. And, these shows will become just as, well-crafted and acted and written as any show out there, and I think it'll be under a different business model where there's not so much bureaucracy, not so much money wasted, and where, again, I think the artists, the people who create the product, will receive more of the lion's share of the profit as opposed to what happens now, where the artists tend to receive the least amount of the profit. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones who do the most work. And look, there's been good distributors in the past, and there's great businessmen and really talented people in the industry. But there's a lot of crap in the industry as well, a lot of waste, a lot of, honestly, I just think, so many productions that really, some of the most talented, some of the best productions have to go through such a rigmarole to get funded, to get done, to get produced, to get, out there. And I just think that building this relationship with the audience puts the audience in the dragon seat, where they determine the success of a project more than the executive in the boardroom. And as long as the audience supports it, it doesn't go off the air because some executive doesn't like it, it's not their cup of tea, or it doesn't fit their business model. We 5 million Firefly fans wasn't enough for Fox. Okay. But under a different business model, that would have more than been doable to make Firefly episodes if they had done it a different way. Even if they just put it on DVDs or on, iTunes or any of those, places where people can download and watch series, they could have made it directly for that. And honestly, they would have done phenomenal. I mean, to me, I don't even understand it. Because same thing with Battlestar. I mean, no matter these kind of shows that are quality, iconic shows, no matter how many episodes you make, they're going to go out and they're going to make money. And they're going to give you an annuity over a course of many, many years. So, again, once you have a great show, but I just think, like I said, I think the artists, producers, writers, directors now, just like the publishers, writers who used to go to the big New York publishers, more and more often they're going to ebook publishing, being able to bypass the publisher and go to distributors who basically, charge way less to port their book to different platforms and out to all the retailers around the world. And then the artist has to become more of a businessman rather than shutting his eyes and ending up getting screwed like so many artists do. You don't have to do all the work, but you need to have a working knowledge of how it works and participate in the success of your project. And too often artists basically turn over everything to somebody else and end up getting screwed. It's a new day, and it's to be successful in this day, you have to be tuned into the world, you have to be tuned into the public, you have to build the business agenda as well as the artistic agenda and build a relationship between the two. And I think that a lot of people are starting to realize they have to be proactive, they have to drive their own success and career, and not wait for somebody to invite them to an audition. For me, it's so lovely for people who appreciate your work to bring you in, sit down and collaborate with you on something you actually really want to do. And then you basically collaborate like I've done on XNR the collaboration has been such a gift from heaven. Sitting down, talking the character development, the backstory, the subtext, getting into how to make this stronger, how to bring out the gold in it, how to, you know, suck the marrow out of the bone and bring about the most dynamic character that you can create. Rather than you come in, you get the script, and basically that's it. You might get a little collaboration, but the truth is that, you know, this is a collaborative medium. And the more collaboration, the better. Somebody ultimately makes a decision, but win-win decisions are always the best. When two people come together or three people and you work out the best way to go and you're all behind it, you're all supporting it, and you've all had a part in it. But again, you know, we have a crazy industry that's got the best of the best and the worst of the worst. And it brings out the best and worst, just like 9/11. Brings out the best and worst in everybody. But I think it's a day and age when you can, you know, you can pick your road, and you can be so much more independent and entrepreneurial in your approach to the industry and not be waiting for a phone call to audition for something you're not interested in. Anyway, I think it's an exciting time to be alive. I mean, I spent 50 years in this industry. So for me, I've gotten to be in some really wonderful projects lately, and I'm developing my own. And I really love the fact that we get to go to the audience and see what the audience thinks. And, you know, you build your own financial model, your own way to make something. And if a lot of people love it, and then you're able to set up something and maybe do something a little more expansively. And if you get not as many people loving it, but you really want to do it, well, then you do it under a different business model. You do it for less. You find a way to be creative, and you still get to make something that means something to you.
And that's absolutely, you know, we see that, you know, there is, I guess, if you have that much more investment into it, whether it be time or energy, not necessarily financially, but whatever you're putting into it, that often, you know, we all know that when you put that kind of level of commitment into it, you often get more back out of it, no matter how successful the project is, you know. And one thing I really want Dave to weigh in the conversation on this one, and this goes back to, you made a great comment about the you know, being invested into these projects. And so when you go to these conventions and you're talking to fans, you know, are you finding that when somebody wants to talk to you about, you know, playing Karn or being in Axanar, do you find yourself really kind of just getting right into it and wanting to just bite into that subject and chew as much as you can and share it with it? I mean, is it sort of, I guess, since you've put more of an emotional investment into the project, do you find that when people want to talk to you about it, that you feel that passion coming out about it?
Yeah, when you're more involved in anything and you care about what you're doing and you love what you're doing, you want to talk about it. If you don't really love what you did, you don't really care about it, then you don't, you know, it's like pulling teeth. You've seen celebrities who are in movies and they don't want to go out and promote the movie. Or if they go on the movie, they say as little as possible about it, or they, you know, you're trying to get them to say things. But if those same actors produced or directed a project themselves and they're out there doing PR, then they're really out there selling it, really out there talking about the story, the actors, how they put it together, and really building a reason why people should go see that. And I think the more investment anybody has in their project, the more passionate, the more articulate, the more dedicated you are to going out there and letting the audience know about this wonderful story. Because, hey, there's, you know, we need I went to see a movie, The 100 Steps, was it? Journey, The 100 Step Journey or something, about two restaurants in France.
Yeah.
You know? Now, it's a film that I wouldn't have thought about. The title, I didn't know what the hell the title was.
It was The 100 Foot Journey, yeah.
Yeah, Helen Mirren stars in it, along with a wonderful cast. Really, truly wonderful cast. And it's such a charming, delightful movie. And I thought, oh, my God, thank God. It's so nice to sit down and watch a movie that touches you, makes you laugh, makes you cry, makes you feel good. And I thought, you know, this is a little indie movie that got produced and made, and some wonderful people were part of it. And fortunately, somebody suggested we go, and I'm always open to anything, you know. I'll always say, okay, let's go try it. Let's go check it out. And anyway, I love the fact that, you know, people are finding new ways to get projects done, new innovative ways, and there's new innovative ways to not only fund a movie, but to film it, to edit it, to put it together, and then to distribute it. And I think, again, we're moving into a new era of, you know, of filmmaking and indie filmmaking, where I think, again, there will be a more intimate, direct relationship with the audience. Mm-hmm. And the audience, you know, if they like something, they will support it. They'll work with you. I mean, we've had many of the same investors on XNR have come back for the second round of the Kickstarter campaign.
Putting my hand up right there. I'm one of those people.
And you know something? You know, there may be – I don't know. I have no clue about this. There could be even a third. And I'll tell you something. I think whatever investment people make in this project is going to be more than well worth whatever it is, because you're going to get so much more back. You're going to get a chance to actually see a lot for that a little amount that you gave up. You're going to get to see a lot on that screen, because the people involved here care about the money, don't want to waste the money, and are finding every creative way to extract more value from every dollar. And they're showing it on the screen. So my thought is that, you know, this to film this movie, you know, movies on the size and scope, a sci-fi action it's a character-driven action piece. There's a lot of action. It's a war. And yet it goes into the characters and the relationships, and it really gets into the depth of what that war is and how it changes cultures and society, which is a big topic. I mean, that's a topic I talk about. Wars have, as horrible as wars have been, and as the horrible things people have died and the suffering and the pain, which, by the way, is absolutely terrible. But in the past and through the centuries, war has progressed civilizations. You know, from the times, call it what you will.
A necessary evil.
It has been a necessary evil. Cultures have been brought together. Technology has evolved. Civilization has moved forward. You know, people have become, on one side of the world, we're unified with people on another side of the world. Again, out of all the horribleness came some pretty incredible things as well. And hopefully in the future, we can find a way to progress as a civilization without war. But, you know, even in the universe, when planets collide, when all of a sudden there's absolute chaos and devastation, I mean, that's how this universe evolved. It evolved out of explosions, out of volcanic action. You know, it seems to cause a evolution of materials, of particles, and probably life itself. So, you know, and I think Alexander the Great traversing, you know, a wide swath of the world, you know, and bringing different cultures to different cultures and bringing different cultures together that became part of his army. And again, lots of bad things done, but at the same time, there was something pretty amazing that happened as a result of bringing the world together and bringing different cultures together. And I just think that I like the fact that some of that is explored in XNR, dealing with how the, you know, the Federation evolves as a result of the war with the Klingons. Mm. And it brings them of age, you know, it's like a rite of passage. And also the Klingons come up against a worthy adversary, and it changes the way they look at the universe and the world. So the humans change the Klingons, evolve the Klingons to a new place, a new awareness, a new level of respect for others, and the Klingons make the humans aware of their own capabilities and possibilities, and take them to the next step in their evolution. So that war actually brings out, you know, something really, really positive. Again, it's hard to look at that when you look at the death and devastation. So, I mean, that is very hard to get over or get through, because it is absolutely horrifying to watch that. But there is something about the process of war. And I think, I mean, when you look at movies like The 300 or Last of the Samurai or, Tora, any of those movies, and you kind of see, everybody's put through a test. People change, evolve, grow, rise to the occasion. Some fall away, but it really will test us as a human being. The war zone, brings out the best and worst in people. Mm. And people discover that they're capable of doing extraordinary things under pressure that they would never have known. So as horrifying, again, as war is, it tends to, cut away the crap and reveal sometimes the diamond, shines in the light. So again, there's always two sides of the coin, but I certainly wish there was some way other than war to evolve cultures, society, civilization forward. But so far, that seems to be the mechanism that drives evolution at the moment.
Hmm. Absolutely. And, you talk about there being, two sides to a coin. You talk about there being, kind of learning on both sides. And you talked about earlier, getting to sort of get out there and meet the fan base, meet the people that kind of make this stuff happen. And kind of bringing it back to the convention, aren't conventions just a great place that, both actors, producers, everyone on that side of the spectrum can go and meet, the fan base that's helping to make things happen. And then on the other side of that coin, all the fans get to actually get out there and meet, all these icons that they've been kind of following throughout their lives.
No, it has absolutely become conventions that have become iconic. Started out as, little sci-fi book clubs or gaming clubs. And then have these small little comic conventions where you could, go buy and trade and barter with comic books. And then slowly they began to bring in the gaming agenda, the media agenda. And then they've evolved way from that now, growing into an even bigger kind of a cultural icon where now shows, every kind of show, they don't have to be just sci-fi. Sci-fi, fantasy, anime, horror. And even various dramas, other television shows now, they bring the actor, writer, directors and do panels on how these projects are made. And all the fans from all these shows now are attending these conventions. So the conventions now have grown into these mega conventions. I mean, everywhere from 1,000 people to 150,000. They're exploding all over. I mean, Salt Lake Comic Con I went to last year, started out the very first convention. They thought they'd have a couple thousand. They ended up with 75,000.
Wow.
And then the state came in to support them because they realized it was bringing a lot of revenue into the state and it was bringing a lot of attention to the state. And then the next one, they were over 100,000. And, I mean, in a year, what other conventions took 10, 20 years to get to because of the day that we live in and the digital highway and how quickly things can be, become viral. And also because I think we've moved out of the kind of the old fashioned thought of just a sci-fi convention that maybe would only be for the traditional geeks, of which I am one. But now it's an event for everybody. And it kind of gets a little demystified so that people realize they get to go talk to amazing authors. You have, you have scientists, you have doctors, you have lawyers, you have truck drivers. Every kind of person goes to these conventions, and they bring their family. There's something for the whole family. They've become really destination events where everybody makes a lot of friends, becomes part of a greater family. And I think maybe kind of debunks a lot of old beliefs about, conventions, which is just full of weird, strange people. Wearing costumes and, now the costuming thing has grown into cosplay. Mm-hmm. That's now something that kids love and grown-ups love. It's a very creative, artistic way to, enter into a particular show reality that you love and role play and that it's become something that everybody enjoys. The whole family can enjoy. The whole family is dressing up. more and more conventions, I see the whole family will spend the whole year coming up with a set of costumes and designs and come show it off at a convention. It's gotten really creative. It's gotten really, really, really fun. And like I said, it's a great opportunity for these fans to come face to face with somebody that they've grown up with, that they've loved on a TV, or it plays a favorite character of theirs. And then that kind of demystifies it too. It kind of allows you to see that, you know, we're human beings.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. I was literally talking to Lars about that right before you came on. You know, we were talking about conventions, and I told him, because I mean, I've been to, oh God, I can't even count how many conventions I've been to, and how many people, you know, I've had the chance to meet. And there isn't anything more gratifying than when you connect with a character, say maybe Apollo or Tom Zarek. And you connect with that character and you grow to love that character and really kind of follow that character, and you know, you're excited every time something happens. And then you get a chance as a fan to meet the actor who plays that character and who really brought them to life. And there is no greater feeling than when you meet them and you can walk away and go, man, you know, that guy or that gal was so nice. You know, they really lived up to everything I could ever want them to be.
Right.
You know? And frankly, the two of us got to do that three times this week.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge honor for us, you know, to get to talk to all three of y'all, and everyone has, you know, just been nicer than we could possibly expect.
Well, everybody, like I said, you know, people in this business, if you've, you know, gone, this is a pretty challenging business. So, I mean, the people that get involved in it are pretty interesting people. And the people that maintain or survive in this business are some of the most interesting people I've ever met. And conventions draw some of the most interesting fans I've ever met. And you can be sitting at the bar, sitting, you know, dancing, doing something, and right next to you is somebody that, you know, you've been watching for the past 3 years on some favorite show. And you have a conversation and you hang out, and again, you start to, I think, you're piercing holes in all these illusions that people have, because it used to be TV was another world, you know, and we out here in fandom looked at the TV and those people were like from another planet.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then we brought all of that closer. We've taken down the wall between the audience and the stage, where people, I think a lot, and it's no different than, you know, American Idol, where all of a sudden everybody had access to coming and auditioning and getting on a show and being seen, and opened the door for people to step into the, you know, the world spotlight that would never have gotten the chance. And I think more and more people who, you know, maybe couldn't get through the pipeline at some studio because maybe they're not tall enough, good looking enough, this enough, that enough, and yet they go out and produce their own show, like my friend who does Pairings, this show about gamers, relationships, and great food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a well-done series, well-acted, well-written, and my God, he's producing it, he's acting in it, directing it, and it's a really fun show, and I went on and guested on one episode on it, and I thought, my God, look what people are doing. It's just a new era of possibility, and we don't have to, you know, we don't have to feel like we're the other. Like those people have the key to the safe, and the rest of us are dancing around outside, wondering, you know, what they do in there and how they got there and why are they so lucky and fortunate. I think more and more people are realizing that they can create their own pathways to success, and there's many ways to do it. And that they're not so different from those other people that have gone out there and done something special. I think it's demystifying that and getting more. I mean, have you ever seen an era when more people, old and young, who are very, very gifted and talented, who never had access, like online, you're seeing all these amazing singers and talented people that never could have got through the pipeline, would probably have never gotten up to bat.
Absolutely.
And now they're being seen because there's a permission. There's a realization that, wow, hey, I can do this. You know, before, I remember looking at the studios once upon a time, Paramount was like, wow, you know, it was just all so overwhelming. And the thought that I could ever even walk through those doors or even, you know, somebody would talk to me. I mean, it was just a very elite kind of place that we all felt like, you know, you had to be a king, you know, some phenomenal something in your mind to be worthy of that. And yet, you know, now I look back on it, even the studio system, you know, I mean, I look at studios, I look at filming on the street, and I always love it, but I don't have that feeling anymore. I don't have that feeling like, you know, those are the people that somehow are so special and the rest of us are just okay, ordinary. There's a lot of talented, gifted people in the world, and they're beginning to realize that there's a place for them in this world, and there's a way to bring their art, bring their ideas, bring their concepts to fruition. And there's many different business models, and the lock and key that used to be held by a few seems to be shifting so that more people have access. I just find it a very exciting time now for anybody with an idea, with a concept, with talent, and wants to go out there and do something. But, you know, it's also scary for many people because the old systems and old ways of doing things that people are familiar with are breaking down, and people are terrified because that's kind of been the way it's been for a long, long time.
Yeah, ultimately, we basically have like you said, you have a new system in place. People are finding out that they are figuring out that they can now do this themselves. And I mean, this show that you're on right now is a direct example of that. You know, 10 years ago, we would have never been able to do this without a proper studio set up and a lot of expensive equipment and access to other technology that just wasn't mainstream at the time. Now, you know, we have three people in three different geographic locations having a conversation about you know, a particular subject, and in a matter of days that will be out to the world and it will reach millions of people. So yeah, absolutely. You know, Richard, we love, just absolutely love to listen to you talk about everything. I mean, a lot of times we don't even know which direction to go sometimes because we are so enamored on the topics that you bring to the table and the thoughts and the wisdom. And we hope that, you know, that we can speak to you, at more at length about other,
anytime. Anytime.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, we've spoken, you know, we hope to bring different aspects of your career and your characters into it, and we hope to be able to support any project that you're behind. You know, we're right now, you know, obviously we're doing this for SciCon Tampa to help them promote the convention a little bit. We're also getting with the help of Mina, we're getting in behind Geekonomicon, and again, you know, so thank you so much again for your time.
You're more than welcome, guys. Thank you so much. I, as you know, it's so fun. I love great conversations. I love to get into talking about anything and everything, but I really love talking about where the world is and how it's changing and shifting, and that's what I teach in my workshops. You know, I'm going to teach that. I'm going to HawaiiCon on the Big Island this week and teaching a workshop about life, show business, the acting, the artistic process, you know, but it's something for everybody. And I really love all the things that I learned and many times learned the hard way. I just love helping to inspire and open people's eyes to all the possibilities that surround them. And it's amazing to watch what people do. A lot of people go out and it just takes sometimes a little, the right word, just a little support and you know, just that, that extra something that gives people the willingness to go out and take a risk, take a chance, and go after their dream. And I'm seeing that happen more and more. And I really love. I mean, I'm wired that way. No matter what I do, anyway. So, you know, what can I say? It's a win-win for me. I get to see it and enjoy watching somebody go out there and succeed.
Yeah, I can't tell you how much the opportunity to speak to you and others in the industry have really fueled our passion to continue doing this and going end on end, interview after interview, episode after episode, and just wanting to do it more and more because you guys have been so approachable for us and we really appreciate that. So again, everybody, just want to let everybody know that SciCon Tampa is this September 26th to the 28th, obviously in Tampa, Florida. Join Richard and many, many other guests for a fantastic time. Make sure everybody to attend his acting workshop because everybody I've spoken to about it so far has come away with they've all had nothing but positive things to say about their experiences with your workshop. So everybody, make sure you get in there and have a bit of fun. And hopefully, Richard, with any luck, we'll see you at Geekonomicon in December.
That sounds good. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Red Shirt Geeks! And that's all the time we have for this edition of the Red Shirt Geeks. I'm Laz Deed, the Pseudo Kiwi.
And I'm Disembodied Dave.
And we are the Red Shirt Geeks, where every expendable hero has a home.
The Red Shirt Geeks podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International license. Permissions beyond the scope of this license may be available at redshirtgeeks.com.